So my message for today is not a spiritual one. It's a message about health. It's a subject that is being talked about more and more in the world today. It's something I've thought about a lot, and it's something that's become very personal to me, and I think it's time to share my experience. And before I start, I wish to say I'm not an expert on this matter. I'm not a health professional. I have no formal qualifications in the subject. All I have, as I said, is my own experience and the information that I have learned whilst trying to find the best way forward for myself. But it's my hope for today that you will be a little wiser and the information will be useful to you. I will help you in your daily lives to be healthier and maybe even avoid what happened to me. The title for today's talk is A Sweet Problem. And in truth, this title is as much about me as the actual subject. And it's probably why at the age of 51, I was diagnosed with chronic 2-type diabetes. So where do I start? I think a confession might be in order. I know it's not a Catholic church, but never mind. As in good addicts, my name is Richard Mullard, and I'm a sugar addict. I had, and if I'm honest, still do have, a rather large appetite for anything sweet, and definitely unhealthy. I struggle every day with addiction to sugar. Yes, that's right, I have an addiction to sugar. This may seem an extreme thing to say, after all it's just that white innocent stuff we all take for granted. But believe me, I know. If there is something sweet in my house, or even at my place of work, anywhere for that matter, there's a very good chance I will eat it. Or it will almost tear me apart, knowing it's there and having to resist the temptation. Early in my rehabilitation, I'm ashamed to say that the container of hundreds of thousands in the kitchen cupboard that the wife uses for cake decorations wasn't safe. And, as with most addicts, I'd always eat them on the sly, not too many, so no one would notice they were disappearing, and of course, a few more won't hurt. Now this worked quite well, right to the point of eating them all. Oops. So, I have props. So, I had the pleasure of going to the supermarket and buying some of my favourite sweets. Unfortunately, I can't eat them. So, three more extra strong mints, probably one of my almost favourite sweets in the world. A packet of these, it's about 16 mints in one of these, would last me, in the car, 5 minutes. I'd get through two packets in about 10 to 15 minutes. 15 minutes I was really behaving myself. Now, each one of these mints is basically sugar and some mint essence. There are 10 calories in each mint and 2 grams of sugar. Okay? I bought these when I used to go out to the exhibitions I used to go to in packets of 6, and I'd eat those 6 in the day. Okay? I also bought one of my other favourite sweets. Funny enough, it's a mint again. Mint Imperials. Now I can only get a 200 gram packet. I'm sure they used to be bigger than this. And one of these, again, in the car, would last me an hour if I was lucky. I used to just go bump, 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 sometimes 3 at a time. Didn't matter. It used to annoy the hell out of me when you used to drop one, it used to disappear under the seat. Not because I used to have to drive it, used to worry about it damaging the car, but it was because I couldn't eat it. Now in one of these, it says here, per 100 gram, bearing in mind this is a 200 gram bag, the amount of sugar in there is 97.9 grams. And they used to be 300 gram bags, and I used to eat one of these in a day. Well, an hour. Now, the NHS says the average adult should consume no more than 30 grams of free sugar a day. So I kind of went a bit over the top, Matt. No, that's why I was always so lively, I think, at the weekends. Now, that's just a small example. We won't talk about the fizzy drinks, the cakes, the chocolate bars, and the sugar lettuce. Oh, the sugar lettuce. So, just an example, if David will pull up the Peter even. I'll switch this on.
That's not
an example of some pictures. This is what I'm like now, of course. Yeah, this is what I'm like now, sort of blank.
This is the right one.
Yeah. So, as usual, I'm pinching the cakes. Is this on? Yeah. So, this is a picture of my wife when we had a wedding vows re-blessed there with Aaron. It's probably a little bit earlier than when I was diagnosed as diabetic, but you can see one of the reasons what and what happens when you eat as that many sweets. You can quite clearly see that at that time I weighed 16 and a half stone. That's, I've actually written down here, I weighed 25 and a half stone, don't know why that was. That's 105 kilograms for the youth of today. In the old money, it's 16 and a half kilo stone. So, that all worked out well, didn't it? It's obviously my favourite subject. A bit more cake there, look. Obviously, this is just afterwards. But I just put these few up just to give you an example of what I was like back in those days. And again, see, as we walked past, I couldn't even resist trying to steal a cake on the way. So, okay, I'll come back to those later. So, you could say, when I got the news from the doctor, it shouldn't have come much of a surprise to me. And you may even say, I probably deserved it. But do you know, at that very moment he told me I was diabetic, I felt, the only thing he could have told me that was worse, that I had cancer. And I even said to him at the time, is life worth living without cake? And I was serious, I wasn't joking. He of course was very sympathetic, and said, if it didn't change my ways, and go immediately onto strong medication, then within 6 months, I would have to take insulin injections, and he'd probably be amputating my legs. I thought, well, thanks for letting me down there, gently, Doc. With this great news ringing in my ears, I went home, sat down, and I cried like a baby. I felt my life, as I knew it, which I would have to say I was quite happy with, had just ended. Diabetes, what is it? How much do you really know about it? And like I did, do you think it ain't that serious? I think it'd be right to assume you've heard of it, and you probably know a little bit about it. You may even know somebody who has it. Well, of course, you obviously know me, so. Like me, you too may have it. But do you know what the really scary part about it is? You may not even know it. I certainly didn't. So let's talk about diabetes. I apologise in advance for the facts and the figures, and it seem a bit boring, but it is important. There are three main types of diabetes. There's gestational, type 1, type 2. Gestational, as the name suggests, only occurs during pregnancy, and it's usually corrected after the pregnancy is over, and obviously it only affects women. But it can be a warning to the mother that if she doesn't change her lifestyle within 10 to 15 years, she too could become a diabetic. Type 1, also known as juvenile diabetes, is where your immune system destroys the cells in your pancreas called beta cells, which are the ones that produce insulin. Insulin is the key your body uses to release energy from the glucose in your blood that powers your body. It's the fuel for your muscles, basically. It is relatively rare, affecting between 5 and 8% of people. It affects men and women equally, and it usually starts in people under 20. But it can happen at any stage in your life. Type 1 is usually a lifelong condition, and means you have to take insulin, usually by injection, every day for the rest of your life. It's also the most dangerous, as your body is dependent on insulin, and without it, you go into diabetic coma, which if not treated quickly, is fatal. Type 2, which is also known as non-insulin dependent or insulin resistant diabetes, is what the main topic is about today, and is the most common form of diabetes, with the numbers of people it affects increasing all the time. In fact, these statistics are called staggering. This type occurs when the pancreas does not produce enough insulin, or the body doesn't react to the insulin. It becomes resistant, and therefore, as in type 1 glucose, e.g. sugar, the body uses for fuel, cannot be used effectively. It's not as dangerous as type 1, as you don't usually fall into a coma, but don't underestimate it. So, at this point, let's have a look at some of those statistics. There are at least 4 million people in the UK with type 2 diabetes. And those with a condition known as pre-diabetes, which is people with blood sugar levels at abnormally high, but have not yet hit the diabetic range, these pre-diabetic numbers have more than tripled in the last 10 years from 11 to 35%, and it's predicted that this will continue to grow, with around 7 million already having the condition. So what's the difference between being a non-diabetic, pre-diabetic and full type 2? Well, normally, diabetes is measured in two ways. One, what you call a HbA1c blood test, which is gives you a 3 month average, it's a more accurate way of measuring it. And in adults in the UK who aren't diabetic, that's normally below 2 mmol, which is mmol. They also use a finger prick test, which gives you an instantaneous one, and that in a non-diabetic should be 6% or below. If you're pre-diabetic, your HbA1c is 42 to 47 mmol, and your finger prick test would be 6 to 6.4%. Type 2 diabetics, HbA1c is 48 mmol or over, and the finger prick test would be 6.5% or over. All of these can vary slightly depending on the time of the day and what you're doing. And just for the record, my first HbA1c blood test result when I was diagnosed as a diabetic was 111. Since then, it's been around 46 to 50. So again, I wasn't doing anything by halves. If you look at the rest of the world, things are even worse. Oh, well, I missed a page about that. Sorry. This topic. If you look at the rest of the world, things are even worse. In the US, there are at least 29 million people with diabetes, and many don't even know they have the condition. The number with pre-diabetes is estimated to be 86 million, with only 1 in 10 knowing they have it, and they all have a high possibility of becoming diabetics. China, recent estimates say there are more than 100 million now have diabetes, while 500 million are pre-diabetic, and again, most are blissfully unaware, and almost all of them will become diabetics. In my case, why did I go to the doctors to receive this fantastic news? The main reason was I had incredibly low energy levels. And I don't mean I was just tired after a hard day or a bad night's sleep. I mean absolutely exhausted. For example, I would come home from work, sit down and fall asleep almost straight away every night. I'd be incredibly hungry, but when my wife gave me my evening meal, I hadn't got the energy to lift the knife and fork, let alone eat it. Going upstairs to bed, I had to haul myself up the stair banister, because my legs just didn't have the energy to climb the stairs on my own. And work, well, that was a nightmare. I was like some crippled old man shuffling around the place, begging for the day to come to an end. Now, when I look back with a greater understanding, I realise I had many more of the other symptoms associated with being pre-diabetic and fully diabetic. So what are these other symptoms? And it's important. These are really important things to listen to, which I'll come on to later. So, after the doctor had scared the jeebus out of me, not eating, drinking anything that I thought had sugar in it for 6 to 8 weeks, going on medication, which was 3 tablets of metformin a day, having a diabetic eye test every year, monitoring my blood sugar levels twice a day, and I attended a couple of courses at the hospital, I began to think, this is not too bad. There was the terrible sugar cravings that I still get even now, the side effects of the tablets, that in my case got decisively worse and more unpleasant. These were somewhat improved after about 2 years and a change in the medication regime, which helped the unpleasant part, but the side effects didn't go away. And it was about this time that I decided to read a book my sister had bought me, which she bought me shortly after I'd been diagnosed. I didn't know why I waited that long, or I certainly didn't realise why at the time. It was probably because of the misguided notion that the pills would cure me, and I could go on, more or less, as usual, obviously minus the cake. In other words, I didn't need to take any responsibility in my condition, which unfortunately appears to be, in my experience, what many diabetics do. You know, just keep taking the pills and everything will be okay. But you have to remember that they are not a cure. They only relieve the symptoms. You're still a diabetic, and there's a chance their effectiveness will reduce and the problem will get worse. It's a bit like being bald and wearing a wig. It might disguise a problem, but you're still bald. Now, another more prof. The book I read, my sister bought me, was this book, The 8-Week Blood Sugar Diet, written by Michael Mosley. And I'd have to say, this book changed my life and my wife's. I've since purchased other books in connection with this, which is this one, which is a recipe book that has 125 recipes in it, and we haven't tried them all. We've tried quite a lot, we haven't found one we don't like yet. So that was very useful, and they're all about helping to regulate sugar. Well, I've not tried this one yet, or read this one. This is another one of his books, which is a slightly different way of doing the same kind of thing, but if you can't manage that. So they were very good books. where did I get to? Well, Dr. Mosley, like me, became a type 2 diabetic. But being a doctor, he was surprised and didn't understand why his blood sugar levels were out of control. So he took steps to find out, and these books about what he found, and I really believe everyone should read it. It too may change your lives. I said earlier, I'll talk about the side effects and the physical costs of type 2 diabetes and why you should not underestimate it. Reading about these in this book, in this one, really scared me, and it was a big influence for me to change. So, the physical costs of diabetes. An increase in the likelihood of hypertension. 70% of diabetics require corrective medication for high blood pressure. 65% of diabetics have high cholesterol and again need medication. Diabetes, even on full medication, you are twice as likely to be hospitalised, crippled or die from heart attacks. Strokes. As a diabetic, you are 2 to 4 times more likely to suffer a debilitating stroke. Diabetes is the number one cause of preventative blindness in the developed world. Diabetes is the number one cause of impotency. Diabetes are twice as likely to suffer from depression. Diabetics are twice as likely to get dementia as non-sufferers. In half of all new kidney failures, diabetes is the primary cause. Most people needing dialysis are diabetics. There are over 7,000 diabetic-related amputations done every year in the UK alone, and in the US, 73,000. These are the serious side effects. But there are many others that we should be aware of, and maybe the early telltale signs of the onset of pre-diabetes or diabetes itself. And these are very important. Those other ones are quite dramatic. These, I think, are far more important because these are the ones, when I look back, I realise I had quite a number of them. And if I'd have understood it better, I could have done something earlier and probably not had some of the negative effects of being a diabetic for as long as I have. And these can be to urinate a lot, dry mouth syndrome, dry skin, the greater chance of developing carpal tunnel syndrome and other similar problems, extreme tiredness, always feeling hungry, blurry vision, slow healing of cuts and wounds, tingling numbness or pain in the hands and feet, yeast infections, patches of dark skin, and sudden loss of muscle mass. Many of these are also common, as I said, in the pre-diabetic stage. So, I make a plea to you now. Please, 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 if you have any of these things, go and see your doctor. Go and ask your doctor for a HbA1c blood test, or simply ask for a diabetic blood test. If you do this, it may change your life. It may even save it. It's that important. And even if you haven't got those symptoms, if you're at your doctor's, I would ask you to do exactly the same, because this is something that is really important. Diabetes, especially type 2, has been on the increase for some time now. But there's been an acceleration in the cases starting around the 1980s, which coincided with a spectacular increase in obesity. Sorry folks, this is a good bit next. People's waist sizes have been increasing gradually going back to the end of the Second World War. But obesity has swept the globe in a single generation, with the rich developed countries being the worst. The fattest people on earth live in Mexico, Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Even Vietnam has seen a number of adults that are overweight tripled in the last 40 years. But there are three countries at the top of the charts for overweight men and women. And I bet if I asked you now, you wouldn't need three guesses to tell me which ones they are. Yes? They're America, Britain and Australia. In the last 30 years, the average person in these three countries have put on an average of 18 pounds, that's 8 kilos, most around the gut and the midriff. Overweight children are even more at risk, with the numbers becoming type 2 diabetes increasing to alarming levels. These high levels of obesity and poor diets affect not just this generation, but the next too. With overweight mothers giving birth to larger babies that are already pre-programmed by their mother's rich sugary diet while still in the womb, leading to an increased chance of them becoming obese and diabetics as they go through their lives. It's also been recently reported that there are a whole generation of children whose diets and lifestyles are so poor that their parents will outlive them by up to 20 years. And we're not talking about third world country here, we're talking about our Western society. It is now considered normal to be a bit chubby. We now have size 20 models. Muffin tops and double chins are out and proud. We celebrate curviness to counter the unrealistic skinny models we have seen for so many years. And we still think in the UK that the quality of food is measured by the amount on the plate. It still remains a sad fact that too much fat in the wrong places has serious consequences to our health. So why has this happened? There are a number of reasons. Food, believe it or not, is cheaper overall. There's more affluence in the world. And the plain hard truth is we eat too much of the wrong type of food. In the US, the average calorie intake has gone up by 25%, which explains the average weight loss and waist size. But do you know what the strange fact is? During that same period, consumption of saturated fats like butter have fallen. But there has been a big increase in the consumption of carbohydrates, in particular refined carbohydrates. These have risen by 20% in the last 15 years alone. So what are refined carbs? Now, the most obvious one is our beloved sugar. But we can include white bread, white pasta, white rice, and the real bad thing with these, white potatoes. I'm sure all these sound very familiar to us. A study by the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found that there was no link between the amount of fat and protein consumed and diabetes. It found a link to the disease with falling levels of fibre in the diet, rising levels of refined carbs, which is now widely acknowledged as the unintended consequence of the war on fat. The reality is that for many years now we've been conned, we've been misled, we've been duped by the principle that if we avoid fat, then we won't get fat. If we don't eat animal fats like milk, butter, cheese, steak and saturated fats, then we'll all be stick thin and healthy. Oh dear, that's not working so well, is it? The advice that started this great change that still persists today came from America and started in the mid-50s, where at the time heart disease was rampant. Even President Eisenhower nearly died from a heart attack, which prompted the American Heart Association to declare war on saturated fats, using some rather flimsy facts to justify its actions. They decided we would all be healthier if we had a diet based on margarine, vegetable oils, bread, cereals, pasta, rice, and that favourite, potatoes. Which in time they managed to convert most of the Western world to think the same. Now, not only was that evidence thin, no pun intended, but an American physiologist, Ansel Keys, published a study saying that if you got most of your calories from fat, as in the US and the six other countries he studied, then you were more likely to die from a heart attack than the Japanese who ate little fat. So to him, and eventually the rest of the world, it was case proven. He however completely ignored that in Japan they eat all the less processed food and sugars, and that in France they have a high fat diet, but they have less heart problems, and they have very nice cakes too. There is a problem with low fat diets, which have spawned from this, and as many as you can probably testify, they are almost impossible to stick to, even by people who have a high motivation. With the results long term, at best, can only be described as poor. In fact, in the 1980s, the author of this book was at medical school, that's Mr. Mosley, and went all out on a low-fat diet, believing it would make him healthy. Out went the butter, cream, eggs, meat. He switched to low-fat milk and yoghurt, which he all hated, and went on a high-carb diet. And despite much self-denial, he gained 30 pounds. That's 14 kilos. That's over 2 stone. And so the skinny medical student certainly chubbed up. Not unlike me in that picture. But more disturbingly, he found that his blood sugar levels had soared. The high-carb, low-fat diet was actually doing him harm. Now at this point, you might be wondering why I'm banging on about obesity, heart disease, low-fat and high-carbs and not diabetes. Well, the answer to that is simple. They are directly linked. But that doesn't mean that if you're fat, you will automatically become diabetic, and the reverse is true. Just because you're thin, you won't automatically not become diabetic. In fact, being a thin type 2 diabetic can be more dangerous than being a fat one. I don't know why, but that's what it said in the book. This is why it's important to understand about how carbohydrates affect your body and where you lay down fat in it. These factors are much more important than whether you are thin or fat. So let's have a look at this relationship we have with carbohydrates and how and where we store our fat. There are basically two types of carbohydrates, complex and refined. And the context that we're talking about today is a good one and a bad one. They're also known as slow and fast release. They're all converted into glucose, e.g. sugar, by our body, which enters our bloodstream so you can then use it to give you energy to carry out your normal daily life. This means if you eat good carbs, complex, slow release carbs, and exercise regularly, eat sensible levels of the right fats, and aren't overweight, then it's unlikely you will have a problem, not just with diabetes, but with many other health problems either. Unfortunately, because of how we've been educated and our lifestyles have changed, what we find today is that people's diets consist mostly of highly refined processed foods, bad and quick-release carbs in excessive quantities, and combined with little exercise means that we're overweight and generally obese, which I was in that picture. That's officially from the doctors. This type of diet is easily digestible sugars, such as breakfast cereals, pasta, rice, bread and potatoes, is killing us. Why? Because it's very easily broken down by the gut and turned into sugar, which fills our bloodstream with huge quantities of sugar, which then means our pancreas has to release massive amounts of insulin to control these levels, whilst it's trying to get the hungry cells, such as our muscles, to take the sugar and so lower the levels in our blood. When you combine this with our sedentary lifestyle we now have, we become what we call insulin resistant, and our blood becomes our bodies become less and less sensitive to the insulin. So our blood sugars level creep up. As they rise, our pancreas pumps more and more insulin into the blood, which doesn't lower the levels, and it just becomes a vicious circle. It's like continuously nagging your husband. After a while, he stops listening. Whilst this destructive cycle is going on, your body has to do something with this excess sugar and insulin. So the insulin converts the sugar into fat storage. And the higher the insulin levels, the fatter we get. And the more your body tucks away as fat, the less you have to fuel the body. Then your body says to your brain, I have low energy levels, so I need to eat. And hey presto, the whole cycle starts again. High blood sugar levels have another interesting side effect, which I'm sure the ladies will find interesting. And I'm sure that a few men here would as well. Some research done in the Netherlands with a group of 600 volunteers found that those in the study with high blood sugar levels were perceived by a group of independent observers to be older than those of the same age with low blood sugar levels. The researchers estimate that for every additional 1 mol increase in blood sugar levels, you age by 5 months. Of course, I can believe this completely, because look at me, I'm only 25. Now, before we go any further, just explain. A mol, which is mmol, is a unit describe the concentration of something. In this case, sugar in the blood. So, after all that, is there any hope? Can we solve a problem like diabetes? Is there a cure? Or better still, how do we make sure it works in the first place? So, we'll now take a break, and we'll go on to talk more about this afterwards. Now before the break, I pose something of a question. Ask, what's the hope? Can we solve diabetes? Can we prevent it from affecting our lives? Well, I have some good news. There is hope. And there are a number of ways to go about it, many of which will not be new to you and you have heard before. I'll start off with one that's going to be popular with all of us. It wasn't very popular with me, but there's no way escaping it. First example I'm going to give is to lose weight. Evidence connecting diabetes and being fat is becoming stronger all the time. Has been known for quite a while now. A study found through dramatic weight loss after bariatric surgery, or what we probably better know as gastric band surgery, used in the case to treat obese people, was so effective that the 201 patients with high blood sugars or full-blown diabetes out of the original 608 who had the surgery found that rapidly afterwards they saw dramatic falls in their blood sugars, and only a few days later, when released from hospital, they were deliberately not given any diabetic medication. 14 years later, it was found that 83% of these same patients still have normal blood sugar levels. And when you read the study in more detail and look at the many other facts about the size and shape, it shows us that there is a direct correlation between weight and diabetes. And being overweight plays a big part in getting it. So, if you put one of the pictures back up of me, just as I talk to this, as a reminder, where I was. That one will do. You may see a difference in, well, you won't, may. There is a difference in the appearance of my wife, but I won't get too much into that because I might get into trouble for that. So, but certainly concentrate on the fat kid stood next to me, that's me. I've shown this picture to other people in the past and they didn't even recognise it was me. So, as I've said, insulin plays a big part in our physical size and how and where we store fat. But it doesn't do this on its own. It also involves an enzyme called lipoprotein, or LPL for short. It is this that directs where your fat goes. For instance, most people don't get obese foreheads. Usually, we lay down fat in certain areas of our body, like midriff, thighs, bottoms and hips. For men, around the gut, and women on their thighs and bottom. This only starts to go wrong for us and we've activated the LPL in the wrong way. So it stores our blood sugars as fat. But again, there is good news regarding LPL. It's also in our muscles. So another way to guard against being fat and seriously reducing the risk of diabetes and can play an important role in reversing it is to exercise regularly and vigorously. Yes, I know it's a bone-on chestnut, and when exercising, LPL will dump excess sugars into the muscles and it's burnt off instead of becoming fat. Now you may think being a bit overweight doesn't really matter. After all, curves can be attractive. What these curves do on the outside are definitely not attractive on the inside. Why? Well, the first organ in the body to store fat is the liver. This causes many problems throughout the body, but can cause the same type of damage to your liver as alcoholism, or a condition known as non-alcohol fatty liver disease, or NAFLD for short. 30% of Europeans and Americans have NAFLD, which can lead to cirrhosis of the liver, and is the most common cause of liver disease in the West. Fat built up in the liver and the pancreas clogs them up, and means that they no longer are able to communicate with each other. This is where the trouble starts, as eventually your body stops producing insulin, and you become a type 2 diabetic. As I've said earlier, that just because you're fat, it doesn't automatically mean you'd be diabetic, or if you were thin, you wouldn't become one. It has been suggested by some research that we have a personal fat threshold, a tipping point which is down in part to our genetics. This tipping point is the body's allowance of how much fat it allows you to have before it starts to accumulate in your liver and your pancreas, and the start of type 2 diabetes. There is again good news. The diet in the 800 calorie diet book that I've shown you is designed to strip away the fat from these two organs, allowing you to regain normal blood sugar levels. And again, if you ignore this, then there is a very high chance of getting type 2 diabetes and you may have permanent liver damage. So if you look at the things I've said so far, how to change, how you can reverse diabetes, even how you can protect yourselves from it, and also be healthier generally, it's not easy. As many of you know, it's difficult to lose weight and keep it off. Change what we eat. Exercise regularly. And I can assure you, to follow that book's diet for 8 weeks is not an easy task. And I can speak with personal experience about trying to keep the weight off and doing the right things. It's very, very difficult. And the reason why is because sugar, in all its forms, is a great temptress. It pulls us away from the right and healthy path. It lures us into an unhealthy lifestyle. At this point, you could ask, why do I bother? Why do we need to bother with all this? It's just too difficult. Why should we worry ourselves with any of it? Why not take the easy way? When it goes wrong, just let the medical profession look after us. They can put it right. After all, they can perform miracles, can't they? What is wrong with taking the pills? It's so much easier than doing the right thing. And you may have a point, but it's not that simple. Diabetes is a complicated illness, and it uses many weapons to harm us. Even with medication, it will still shorten your life by 10 years. It's not just the personal and physical costs either, though. What about the financial cost to the NHS? All the pills and other complications that come with it. And to yourselves, see how your medical holiday insurances are affected. And with the epidemic continuing to grow, so will these costs. So what are these costs? It's currently estimated that in this country, £20 billion a year is spent fighting diabetes. In the US, this figure is more like $240 billion. Metformin is currently the best-selling anti-diabetic drug, which I was on, with sales of over £2 billion a year. This is a drug that's been used for some time now, so there are some drug companies out there making a lot of money. And you could assume by this is a very effective drug. Well, believe it or not, some pretty large-scale control trials have taken place recently, which didn't find much evidence that showed that it was effective at reducing heart attacks, lower limb amputations, or increasing life expectancy in diabetics. It does, however, help with weight loss. It's a strange one, but it does. This is because the most common side effect of it is nausea. The evidence also seems to suggest that it's only a stopgap medication, with you eventually needing more powerful and expensive anti-diabetic drugs, including insulin. These, however, tend to have the opposite effect to metformin, as they tend to make you hungrier, so you eat more, and of course, when you eat more, you get fatter. It was described by one expert by saying the more aggressively we treat them, the fatter they get. Now, I know I bombard you with lots of facts, and you may be unsure how it affects you, and what you need to do. So, what can we do? How do we stop the spread of this epidemic? And how do we protect ourselves? Well, the first thing we need to do is think about what we do. We need to change. We need to radically rethink our lifestyles and how we eat. We must stop just going with the flow and hoping it will be okay. We have to take responsibility for our actions. We can't just blame it on something else. This is where I went wrong. I'm not taking any real responsibility for my health. Right up to the time where the reality of it smacked me right in the face. The gravity of my actions became very real that day I sat in the doctor's. That sickening feeling that it was too late. Even then, it took me some time to realise I had to take a different path. One that runs in a different direction to the majority and what I was used to. No one forced me to do this. And like you have now, I had a choice. We don't have to listen to the doctors. You can use your free will. It's your choice. But if you choose the wrong path and continue down it, then no one can save you. The last few words I've just read to you I thought about for quite some time. The reason for this is I realised that this process I've been through and are still going through is a journey. A journey not dissimilar to another one I have been on, and one that should be familiar to us all. Remember at the beginning I said my message today was not a spiritual one, it's a message on health? And this might be true in part, but to me, both of them have been prompted by Christ. Both have led me to a place of darkness. Both have given me a better future. Both have brought me hope. I prayed a lot about my diabetes, and being given this book and reading it was in part answer to some of those prayers. Christ gave me a shove in the right direction, strengthened me along the way, helped me deal with the temptations, and continues to be with me as I continue forward in both my spiritual and my health journey. I say to you, your health is a fact, and like God, you can't hide from it. It's always there, good and bad. Just the Lord is always there. I was a fool that used ignorance and denial to control my actions, and just like sin, there is a consequence. I think Peter summed it up when he said, "The Lord knows how to rescue the godly from trials, and to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment." What has happened to me doesn't have to happen to you, and if it has, there is hope. Start today. Do not prevent yourselves being rescued from the trials of poor diet and poor health that goes with it. Because if you do, like me, that day of judgment can come and smack you in the face. I will conclude by saying thank you for staying awake and listening. I have very little else to say, other than I've attended recently a series of talks put on by the Northern Conference at Leamington Church about reversing diabetes. I brought with me the copies of the literature that they have provided, which I would encourage you to take and read. They have some very good information with some tips on good and bad foods, exercise, etc. So please take one of each and read them and make that change. Thank you.